I am Planta on the line. This is the commentary.ca. Shaughnessy Bishop Stahl is highly regarded in the literary community here in Canada. Sorry. His first book, a memoir, Down to This, received good notices and many award nominations. He has just published his first novel, a book described as audacious, not for the faint of heart, harrowing, spellbinding, as well as Bukowski, Craggy, and Hornby Sweet. Mason is the lead character, and he's not doing too well, battling gambling, alcohol, and drug vices. He aspires to be a writer, but he can't seem to get it together. His landlord, creditor, and dealer is his friend Chaz, who gets him to start selling hot dogs. He gets a gig as a writer from some guy who asks him to write a love letter to this girl. The guy kills himself, and it turns out he's just written the guy's suicide note. The book goes on from here, and we'll get the author to tell us more. It's called Ghosted, and it's published by Random House. Mr. Bishop Stahl, who also appeared on the television program The Newsroom, is in Vancouver today. Please welcome to the Planta Online program Shaughnessy Bishop Stahl. Good morning, Mr. Bishop Stahl.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So what else happens in the book? So
nothing else happens.
That's no, that's it.
A lot happens. I've learned not to give away too many plot points.
Yeah. So Kevin Chong, in his review in the Globe and Mail, says that there are at least three or four books in here, and you put them all in one.
Sure. There are probably more.
Yeah.
But most of the books that I read and enjoy could probably have been parsed into a dozen other novels. That's kind of the nature of the organically grown book, you know. I don't start off with an entire plot summary in my head and start writing the book kind of, at least this one, just kept growing. And then you have to kind of be pruning it back as it grows, like a tree, you know. There's a lot stuffed in there. I just, some people might find it overwhelming, but I think it's an entertaining read myself.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Mason, after he writes a suicide note for this one guy,
mm-hmm.
People start coming to him. Is that the deal?
No, there's a bit of a gray area there. One of his clients, one of his hot dog clients, a guy who, a multiphobic, very large man who likes hot dogs, starts hanging out at Mason's hot dog stand. Now, his hot dog stand is it's kind of a mafia-themed hot dog stand. He's called the Dog Father, and it's a large kind of fedora-shaped hot dog stand. And this one customer, Warren, hangs out there at lunch and discovers that Mason is a writer, and he hires him to write ostensibly a love letter for a woman that Warren hardly knows, as sort of Cyrano de Bergerac kind of thing, Mason takes on the job, delivers the letter, and Warren turns up dead. We don't know if he's taken his own life or not. After much self recrimination and then anger towards Warren, and after it's thought by Mason that he's been tricked into writing a suicide letter, then Mason eventually turns that idea around in his head until he explains to himself that this would be a good career opportunity, and posts posts an ad online, and that's how he then generates clients.
And so some of the characters that he encounters, they can be described as sort of down and out losers, are they?
I wouldn't say down and out losers. I mean, they're definitely people who are on the edge, are despondent in some way, people who are entertaining the idea of offing themselves. I mean, I hope that there's a whole kind of spectrum of character presented in the book through his clients. The first book I wrote, which was nonfiction about living in a shanty town, one of the purposes of telling that story was to show that there are as many different kinds of people who live, you know, homeless as do with homes, that, you know, people can't easily be stuck in, you know, butcher, baker, homeless person, candle maker, you know. And I think that this, I hope that in this novel, not that the despondent don't all seem to have the same face.
It's not a dark book, right?
It's a very dark book.
It is.
It's a very dark
book. Yeah. What does it say about life, though? I mean, do you have to go dark to understand life a little bit better?
I think that's a fair summation, sure. I mean, I think you have to do a hell of a lot of things in life to understand life better. But that would be one of them. That would be on my list, sure.
Yeah. Do you know people or have you encountered people that have thought about offing themselves?
Well, I think, as unfortunately most people in the world and in our culture, I mean, I've had a few people who I've known, and some of I've been not enormously close, but close enough to be friends with and to have liked, who have ended their own life. And the more that you talk to people about this sort of thing, it's kind of like cancer. You know, everybody's lost somebody that they know that way. And to me, it's, you know, the most devastating, terrifying idea, let alone reality. Just even the idea is there's so much beneath it. It's one of those things that once it happens, you can only kind of... Even the surface is terrifying. You can just only imagine what was beneath it. How many hours, days, months led to that fatal decision. And so it's one of the things that scares me most in the world. So I had to write about it. I think that's one of the ways that people exorcise these fears, or to write about them, you know.
The book is set in Toronto, right?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
The main action of the book is all set in Toronto. There are some flashbacks, etc., to actually Vancouver, BC, and then some various other little pockets of the world.
You live in Toronto now, do you?
Yes.
Yeah. I read somewhere that you grew up here, and mm-hmm. you lived in Montreal for a spell.
Correct.
And growing up, you were, I guess, I don't know if trained is the right word, but you hated Toronto.
I think maybe that's lessening a little bit now in our culture, but when I was growing up, definitely in Vancouver and Montreal, you were taught by the community to hate Toronto.
Yeah.
And so whenever I would visit Toronto, I went there with those glasses on, you know, and only saw the fat, boring businessmen in front of me, and now I live in probably the most kind of multicultural, exciting, kind of gritty, strange neighborhood right in the middle of Toronto. And I've grown to really love it. I still love coming home to Vancouver and visiting Montreal. I was just there for book launch last week. I've somehow managed over 30 and a bit years to embrace those three cities fully.
I'm sure you're asked on this book tour how much of your life, your experiences, and people mm-hmm. you encounter are in this book.
Yeah.
Is there a lot of what you've seen?
43%.
43, exactly 43%,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, I figured it out now.
Very good. Yeah. Is there a character that you like?
Yes, I mean, Mason Dubisi, who's the main character, he looks a lot like me, and he lives in an apartment that looks like mine, and he has some of the character flaws that I have. What I did in creating him was try to isolate the baser, more unappealing aspects of my personality and really amplify them. And so he's me on a really bad day, basically.
You're a new dad, right?
Yeah, I am.
Yeah.
Yes, I have a 3-year-old, a 3-month-old.
Yeah, how has that changed your life, or has it?
I guess it's one of those things that I couldn't even begin to imagine how it's changed my life yet. I guess I'll find that out. But of course, I mean, it's great. It's what can you say that hasn't been said? It's just fantastic. And one of the odd kind of things that's changed is that, you know, as a writer, I used to struggle kind of daily with the thought that my mother was going to read this, and now I have to sit there and think, oh, one day my son's going to read this. But then you have to put that thought away.
Has it changed your? I guess it occupies most of your time, so one would assume that time would be.
So that saves you from more devilish pursuits, perhaps.
Like the writing, maybe.
Especially the writing. Yeah, I don't know yet if because the book and the baby came out at pretty well the exact same time. And I've been on, book tour and doing publicity and things surrounding that since then. So I haven't really, this is the time in the writer's year or decade where they are not expected to be writing. And it happens to be when I have my new kids. So when I do go back and sit down at the desk, I'll know then if I can still do it, I guess. That's the answer.
And then you, when you're sitting at the desk, is it a computer? Is it pen and paper? Or what is it? How do you write?
I wrote this book on a laptop that just died about a week ago. So it just made it through this book. The book took 6 years to write. My laptop was created in 2004, so it just made it through the writing of this book. I think it takes about a writing machine per book. The book before, I wrote entirely by hand in spiral-bound notebooks because I was living, on the streets and in a shantytown while I was writing it. I actually wrote one long book before that only about four people have ever taken a look at, and I wrote that one by hand and then by typewriter and then on my first computer. So I'm comfortable writing on anything, and there are advantages to each different method. There is something, I think, lost in the process when you can just hit delete so easily.
Did you always want to be a writer?
No. Much like Mason, I wanted to be a cowboy, Jedi, superhero, Sandinista poet king, for most of my childhood and teen years, and also a baseball player and a boxer. But I still plan on becoming all those things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just I take a stint out to try writing so I could have a more stable life.
Yeah. Now, how long is this stint going to last? I mean, one would assume, because the memoir was well received. This novel has been well received as well.
Yeah.
The assumption is that you'll write another novel, another book.
I guess that's the assumption. I'd like to keep writing as long as people are willing to keep publishing it and reading it. I'd probably keep writing anyway, but it's nicer to know that somebody out there is going to read it.
Now that you've written the novel, you had the memoir, as I said earlier, is there one that you prefer, perhaps?
One of the books that I prefer?
Or one of the genres.
One of the genres.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that in some ways I prefer reading fiction more. I mean, fiction was my first, it sounds cheesy, but my first love as far as writing goes. When I was a kid, that's what sparked my imagination the most and changed probably who I am the most, was reading fiction. But I find writing it is much more challenging for me than writing nonfiction. Nonfiction comes very easily to me because the parameters are already set to a degree, the parameters being reality and something you've experienced or researched, whereas with fiction, the parameters are not evident, and so you have to keep creating them yourself, which can be a daunting task. So, yeah, fiction I find more difficult, but then on the flip side, there's a more perhaps intense reward to it. Insofar as when you get to look down at what you've created, you know you've created it out of nothing. So there's kind of a greater alchemy to the thing. And as far as which book I prefer, I don't know yet. I think when I read this novel in a couple of years, I'll have a greater sense of the things I like about it and the things that I still want to, you know, get back in and dig at. And I feel that way about the first book. I think every writer feels that way about books once they're out there. You know, you still want to keep messing with them.
And when you're writing the novel, mm-hmm. are you reading at the same time? I mean, some writers say they can't do that because it just influences the writing.
Yeah, I don't really understand people who say they can't do that insofar as I wonder when they ever read. Because as a writer, I mean, if your job is to write books, you're doing it all the time. I mean, I've been working on this book for 6 years. If I hadn't read a book during that time, then my brain would probably atrophy.
Yeah.
But that said, I'm a very slow reader. I think that comes a lot from... I teach writing, and so I am constantly reading my students' manuscripts, and over years of doing that, as well as editing other people's work, as well as editing my own work, I find it very hard to read a sentence without kind of taking it apart, which takes some of the enjoyment out of reading. And I'm trying to reteach myself how to read just to enjoy the story.
Paul Querington, he was a friend of yours, right?
Yeah, he was a very close friend of mine.
Yeah. What did he mean to you?
The things that close friends mean, you know. I mean, he was... I respected him so thoroughly as a writer, and he was probably my favorite, you know, at the time. You know, he's passed away now, but living Canadian author. I loved his books, but we never sat around and really talked about writing and the process and things like that. We'd talk about, you know, poker and women and traveling, and we'd do a bit of it, you know. He was a good friend, and I tried a couple times to get him to help me with the novel, and he was never much of a help.
Yeah.
But he was an inspiration, and especially over that last year after he was diagnosed. I've never seen anybody work so hard and so well. He was so sharp and in tune and strangely happy. He was happier than I'd ever seen him.
It must be really fun to get to know, be friends with people that you admire, that inspire you.
It's one of the great joys of being of sticking with trying to be an artist. You know, is that even though you don't make the money and you don't get the security and this and this and that, one of the things you get to do is meet a lot of interesting people and become friends with some of them.
Shaughnessy, I will read this book this summer.
I appreciate that.
And it just sounds fascinating. And congratulations on it. Continued good luck with the book. And say hi to Bob, would you?
I absolutely would. Thank you so much for your time.
You're very welcome. The book is called Ghosted. It's published by Random House. Its author, Shaughnessy Bishop Stahl, on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plunder.